Kuion meri hylke häl ja sin ryntamas suurhäl. Kuion meri hylke häl ja sin ryntamas on suurhäl. Nöntä hea on mäeltä siis, et kuskil rannaliin. Ja mere ääres väike maja ottamas on mind. Nii hea on mõelda siis, et kuskil rannaliin. Ja mere ääres väike maja ottamas on mind.
Tere! And welcome to History of Estonia podcast. In this episode, we are proud to present to you the life and importance of Rear Admiral Johan Pitka to Estonia during the War of Independence and his legendary and mysterious death defending his country against the Soviet army in the mayhem of the German retreat from Estonia towards the end of World War II. The best source I could find in English was an article in Nauticopedia titled Rear Admiral Sir Johan Pitka, an unlikely British Columbian who founded the Estonian Navy, by John McFarlane. I hope you enjoy it, but before I start, I would like to make a quick note about Kaja Kallas's crucial trip to Washington, D.C. Last week on November 12th and 13th, in the heart of Washington, D.C., amidst the towering monuments and bustling political scene, stood Kaja Kallas, Prime Minister of Estonia, a beacon of hope in a time of darkness. The world watched with bated breath as Ukraine, a nation on the front lines of freedom, faced the unrelenting onslaught of Russian aggression. Yet, amidst this chaos, Kallas emerged as a clear and unwavering voice for both Ukraine and Estonia, two nations bound by a shared history of struggle and resilience. Kallas's recent trip to the United States was a testament to her unwavering commitment to the security and preservation of democratic values. In the halls of power, she sought the critical ear of Republican Speaker Mike Johnson, a man of great influence and conviction. Through her eloquence and unwavering conviction, she painted a stark picture of the stakes at play, reminding the world that the fate of Ukraine is inextricably intertwined with the fate of Europe. Despite its relentless onslaught, the Russian war machine is facing increasing attrition. Their desperate attempts to overwhelm Ukrainian forces with sheer manpower are proving futile, as the Ukrainian spirit remains unbroken. Russia's insatiable hunger for victory blinds them to the reality that their resources are finite, and at their current rate of attrition, their military might will inevitably crumble. Yet Russia's desperation is not without its dangers. They cling to the hope that the West, particularly the United States, will grow weary of this seemingly endless conflict and abandon Ukraine to its fate. This is where Kaja Kallas's unwavering voice is so crucial. Her impassioned plea for continued support will resonate with those who understand the gravity of the situation. Admittedly, Prime Minister Kallas has faced domestic challenges, with her husband's business dealings with Russia casting a shadow over her leadership. However, her unwavering commitment to Ukraine and her exceptional oratory skills have earned her the respect of her peers on the global stage. Her visit to the United States was an opportunity to demonstrate her true character, much like a weathered but sturdy lighthouse, piercing the fog, illuminating the path for those lost at sea. Amidst the chaos and uncertainty, Kaja Kallas stands as a beacon of hope. Her voice is not just a plea for Ukraine, it is a clarion call for the defense of democracy and the preservation of freedom for all. Let us not allow Russia's aggression to erode our resolve or diminish our commitment to the values that defines our shared humanity. The future of Europe, and indeed the world, hangs in the balance. Johann Pietke was born on the 19th of February, 1872, at Jalgsamaa village, Järvamaa County, Estonia. He grew up on the Ansumardi farm about a kilometer away from his birthplace and attended local schools and then senior secondary school in Tallinn. In 1890, he obtained a position in the crew of the steamship Yekaterina II, sailing out of the port of St. Petersburg, Russia. In 1891, Pietke studied at the Kazmu, Kurosawa, and Paldiski Marine Schools. In March 1893, he qualified as a mate, deep sea, which has also qualified him as a master, which was coastal. He re-entered the Paldiski Maritime School in 1894, and on the 28th of March, 1895, he qualified as a master mariner, which is deep sea. He served in a number of vessels before a term in the coastal defense ironclad ship Admiral Yushakov for 6 weeks at Liepāja, which is Liepāja. It is thought that he was commissioned at the time as an ensign in the Imperial Russian Naval Reserve. In 1902, he joined the team constructing a transport vessel from the Russian Pacific Squadron at the Mullenthal Engineering Shipyard. On February 9, 1904, the Russo-Japanese War was declared. Pietke and Mullenthal evaded the mobilization into the Imperial Russian Navy by sailing to England. In 1904 to 1911, Pietke lived in England, and in 1905, he moved his family there so they could live together in Kingston upon Hull and later in Liverpool. In 1907, he moved with his family back to Tallinn, founding the Marine Trade Association. Also in 1907, he founded the Estonian-Latvian Shipping Agency. In 1912, he was one of the founders of the Mere Abi Marine Aid Mutual Insurance Company. He purchased the Laevandus Shipping Trade Company. In 1917, he became the director of the Baltic Rescue Company by purchasing it from German interests. After the start of the Russian Revolution in 1917, there was a strong counter-revolution reaction attempting to restore the old order. Estonia had long been under Russian influence, and Estonians aspired towards independence. Pietke was elected to the Tallinn Council of Workers and Soldiers' Deputies as a representative of Laevandus. The council consisted mainly of immigrant workers and soldiers who were advancing Russian territorial interests. In 1917, the provisional government established Estonian sovereignty by uniting the country and transforming it from part of the Russian sphere towards independence. Late in the year, the Estonian Provincial Assembly was established under the leadership of Konstantin Pats. Russian civil servants were dismissed and replaced by Estonians. Political parties of all colors were formed, with Bolsheviks making dramatic gains. In October, the Bolsheviks seized power and began repressing Estonian nationalists who were forced underground. Independence was declared by the nationalists at Pärnu on February 23, 1918. The German troops reached Tallinn 2 days later. Pietke started organizing returning Estonian soldiers who had previously fought in the Russian army during the First World War. For his nationalist activities, Pietke was brought to the attention of the security service, and he was forced to go underground after the communists sentenced him to death. Pietke shaved his trademark beard and mustache and went underground living with his friends in Tallinn. After the start of the German occupation in February 1918, privileges of the Baltic Germans were restored, and Estonia was denied independence. The Germans proposed to establish a Baltic dukedom. Pietke organized the Self-Defense League, which had been proposed in Tallinn the previous fall. This brought him into conflict with the German authorities, who ordered the organization to disperse. Pietke displayed the flexibility that allowed him and other Estonian leaders to survive over the years by renaming it as the Bürgerwehr, and recruited a number of prominent Germans as members. He himself took the deputy head position, deferring to an ethnic German as leader.
The German occupation of Estonia lasted from February to November 1918. And with the close of the First World War in November, German power in Estonia collapsed. The Estonian members of the Bürgerwehr were reorganized into the Estonian Defense League, electing Pitka as leader and Major General Ernest Pütter elected as military commander. The Bolsheviks renounced the Treaty of Brest-Litovsk and commenced a campaign to reclaim territories lost from the old Russian Empire. On November 22nd, the Red Army attacked Narva. Repulsed by the German troops still bivouacked in the city. On November 28, 1918, the War of Independence was declared. Pitka arrived in Narva in an improvised armored train. Pitka was already involved in constructing and manning of several armored train units. The first one was ready 10 days after the start of the war, and the second became ready 2 weeks later. In total, 5 armored trains were built during the war, and they played a crucial role in the Estonian victory. Many called Pitka father of the armored trains for this accomplishment, and they were involved in major attacks between the stations at Vaivara and Auvere. Red Army attacks were repulsed briefly by the German forces, but they lacked the will to fight. The war was over for them. As they retreated, the Red Army occupied Narva. Estonian Bolsheviks established the Commune of the Working People in Estonia, intended to become part of the new Soviet Union. By December, the Red Army had occupied half of Estonia and were at the gates of Tallinn. In February 1918, a Royal Navy squadron intercepted the Red Army force at Tallinn. On January 6, 1919, General Leidner counterattacked using the armored trains to great advantage, and Narva was captured on the 11th of January. During the Estonian War of Independence, Pitka participated in the establishment of the Estonian Navy needed for making landings on the north coast in late December 1918. These landings were intended to mount a rear guard attack on the Red Army to create disorganization and to reduce its impact on the fronts. On April 22, 1919, Pitka was appointed as a captain in the Estonian Navy, then part of the Army. On September 21, 1919, he was promoted to Vice Admiral, with his title later changed to that of Rear Admiral to correspond more closely with international naval ranking conventions. He was then appointed as Commander-in-Chief of the Estonian Navy. The greatest battles were fought with the Baltic German Landeswehr forces. Pitka led the Navy in all major operations, including supporting the 1st Division in the capture of Narva from the Russian SFSR and supporting the 3rd Division attacking the Landeswehr fortifications at Riga, Latvia. This brought the war to a close and allowed the Karlis Ulmanis government to reestablish its control in Latvia. Post-war activity. The stress of war was crushing on Pitka, who became ill. He was forced to resign his position as commander of the Estonian Navy and was moved to England for treatment. He was decorated by Estonia, Latvia, and was appointed as the Knight of the Order of St. Michael and St. George by King George V, in recognition for his huge contribution to the Allied effort to counterattack the Soviet gains in the Bolshevik Revolution. He soon returned to Estonia, intent on political fighting against corruption in government and in the civil service. The peace treaty of Tartu was signed with the Russians, which allowed the right to return for Estonians abroad. A new constitution in 1920 produced a parliament in which no party had a majority. In 1920, Pitka founded the Vigilance Union and established a newspaper called Valve, or The Guardian, at the Uhesalu Common Life Publishing House to carry the fight. In 1923, he ran for a seat in the Riigikogu for the National Liberal Party. The party's newspaper, Eesti, was published from 1923 to 1924. The Bolsheviks tried and failed in 1924 to take over Tallinn, and the country was in crisis. Petka ran in the electoral district of Petarimaa County, but was not elected in spite of the party gaining four other seats. Bitterly disappointed with the result, Petka left Estonia with his family, accompanied by his supporters and their families. They decided that they must find a new home in Canada. Estonian colony in British Columbia. During his role as a merchant mariner, he had apparently been a representative of the Canadian Pacific Railway Company. As a result, he had become interested in Canada and was aware of Canada's immigration policies, the availability of homesteading land, and its natural beauty. He decided to establish a settlement in the Tsalcha area of Fort St. James, British Columbia. The Tsalcha area was located across Lake Stewart from the Hudson Bay Company post at Fort St. James. Petka was given 260 hectares, and his son-in-law, Alexander Parin, received 93 hectares. They were not required to pay for the land for 15 years, by which time they were supposed to have been well established. Petka built a 7-room house. On April 3, 1924, he led Estonian settlers who had arrived at Fort St. James to their new home. The initial settlers were Petka's family, consisting of Lady Marie Helena Petka, sons Edward and Stanley, daughters Saima and Linda, and son-in-law Lieutenant Alexander Parin. The families Andriksen, Rosen, and Saar, Colonel Steinman, Mr. Nielk, and Mr. Partelson, with their wives and Messieurs Kusk, Olam, Pum, Sulatk, Weimel, Unger, and Williamson. Petka was receiving an Estonian government pension during this time. In the early days, the Estonian settlers were reported as happy living in the wilderness, but this would not last. Petka tried a sawmill, dairy, and sheep farming, and raising various crops. None of these efforts paid out his desired financial yield, and it slowly became clear that the Canadian experiment would not last for the settlers. Landmarks around Fort James still bear their mark, including Petka Mountain, Petka Bay, Petka Bay Resort, Linda Lake, Colony Point, and Perrins Beach Provincial Park. Return to Estonian political life. In 1930, he returned to Estonia for a visit and to see his son August Andreas. This visit became a permanent return to Estonia. After his arrival, he was offered the chairmanship of the Estonian Central Consumer Society, serving from 1930 to 37. His family joined him from British Columbia in 1932, and after their return to Estonia, they enjoyed prosperity, and Petka himself became involved in the political movements of the day. He joined the Warriors of Independence and the Central Union of Warriors of Independence, acting as the deputy chairman from 1931 to 32. In 1931, he was also the founder of the Brothers in Arms Club. These organizations were all focused on political struggle, fomented by representatives of radical elements. After the Third Congress of the Warriors of Independence Unions in March 1932, Petka and the members of the Brothers in Arms Club left the Central Union. Petka founded yet another organization, the War of Independence Combatant Society, and was elected as chairman in 1933. He was elected as chairman of the Endowment of the Submarine Fleet later the same year. In 1934, the League of Liberators, or VOPS, representing veterans from the War of Independence, threatened political stability, creating the possibility of a radical quasi-fascist regime. To blunt this force, General Leidner reclaimed his position as commander-in-chief at the request of President Patz, who in turn assumed emergency powers under a new constitution widely welcomed in Estonia. Together, they froze all political activity and forced through a new constitution, focusing power in the president and the army. Leaders of the VOPs were imprisoned, but released sometime afterwards. In 1937, Pitka was elected as a member of the lowest chamber of the National Assembly, representing Jarvama County. Soviet influence in Estonia was increasing constantly. In 1939, border incidents were staged that created an opportunity for the Soviets to demand concessions. Red Army bases were established, and by using Soviet bombers to bomb Finland during the Winter War, sovereignty was compromised to the point where the Estonian government had lost control. On June 21, 1940, a client Estonian Socialist Republic was established under Soviet domination, ending independence. War returns Pitka to life and death. After the Soviet coup d'etat and occupation in June 1940, arrest of the previous national leadership, high-ranking military and police officers, and intellectuals began, followed by wider arrests, deportations, and executions of dissidents. For years, Pitka had been on a watch list of the Soviet secret police. Pitka escaped from Estonia to Finland in August, and he remained there until April 1944. In late 1941, he submitted a proposal to Risto Ryti, president of Finland, proposing a type of union between the two countries. The proposal was firmly rejected. On June 14, 1941, Pitka's son and their wives were arrested by the Soviet occupation government and disappeared into Russia. August Andreas was shot in Moscow's Butyrka prison July 20, 1942. Stanley and Edward were shot in the Solikamsky prison on September 1, 1941. Pitka's daughters, Saima Yosalu and Linda Parin, their husbands and their mother fled to Sweden by boat in late 1944, and from there returned to Canada in 1948, settling in the Vancouver area in 1949. In September 1944, the Germans were retreating, and the Action Front arrived at the border of Estonia. Nationalists decided to support a German counterattack against the traditional communist enemy of Estonia. Pitka tried to join the Finnish army, but was rejected due to his advanced age. He returned to Estonia in April 1944. Jüri Uluots organized a new Estonian government, headed by Otto Tief. In 1944, Pitka returned to Estonia to organize military resistance to fight for Estonia's independence, taking advantage of the vacuum caused by the departure of the German forces before the arrival of the Soviets. Because the Germans were fighting his old enemies in the Red Army, he was empathetic towards the Germans. He was given support to form a special unit, the Admiral Pitka Shock Troop, with several hundred men. At the age of 72, he created the Estonian Army units on September 21, 1944, the day before the arrival of the Soviet troops. These units fought pitched battles, the fiercest at Kela and Kose, and then in Lanema County. Pitka organized the last defense of Tallinn against the advancing Red Army. At this point, he disappeared, creating persistent legends which reported that he was killed in several different locations on the same day, at the end of September 1944. Several stories relate to his death, either to a battle against a Soviet tank group, or perishing on the stormy Baltic Sea when trying to make his way to Sweden aboard one of the last small boats fleeing the country. It is possible that he died later as a prisoner in the Soviet Union. In his last radio broadcast, he stated, "I am not afraid of the communist bullets. I can still carry a rifle and shoot." As the Germans fell back, the Estonian nationalists tried to reestablish sovereignty on September 18, 1944. But within 4 days, the Red Army entered Tallinn to begin an occupation that would last until the collapse of the Soviet Empire. In recent years, Estonia has begun to give recognition to the complex historical figure. Monuments, museum, exhibitions, postage stamps, and historic sites in Canada and Estonia highlight his life and accomplishments. An Estonian naval ship now bears his name and operates regularly in the NATO operational structure.
My family, a friend of mine, and I are getting ready to make our annual trip to Estonia this December. So that means there will be a break during the holidays, unless something interesting happens and I decide to make an episode while I'm in Estonia. One never knows what opportunities might present themselves. If anyone is interested in getting together, you can reach out to me via email, which is sparsleyw@gmail.com. The music featured in this episode is Kadri Yatma and Lauri Nebel. Qui on mere hulgehal. So until next time, Nagamist.